The bartenders had gotten up off the floor behind the bar and were looking at the carnage. One shifted his eyes to Matt.
I know you. You're Matt Bodine, the Wyoming gunfighter. And you must be Sam Two Wolves.
Wellman stepped up to the bar.
You're right on both counts. Give me a ride.
The marshal stepped gingerly into the bar room and pulled up short at the wreckage.
Lord have mercy. I ain't never seen nothing match this.
Then you should have been with me at that trading post up on the Platte back in 39. Maybe it was 40. I just remember exactly.
You're Dick Wellman.
Yeah, and stop interrupting. Me and the others brought our pelts in to sell. Bunch of hard cases got it into their heads they was going to steal them. I think the body count was 45 when we got through. Looked like we'd been slaughtering hogs.
Wellman downed his rye and gestured for a refill.
Step up here, Marshal. Have a drink, son.
The Marshal was at least 50 years old.
I got to write a report on this.
Oh, hell, Marshal. Just say the punks got into a squabble among the cells. That'd be the easiest way to tell it. We either drag them crybabies out of here or kick them in the head. If somebody don't do something with them, I'm a-fixin' to shoot the both of them again.
Here now. There'll be none of that.
A man in a black suit, white shirt, and high starched collar stood between the shattered bat wings, a leather bag in one hand. The marshal waved at the bloody scene.
Howdy, Doc. Looks like you got your work cut out for you.
Help me, Doc. I've hurt awful bad.
The doctor moved toward the young man with holes in his belly.
You should have stayed home with your mama and helped your daddy slap the hogs, boy.
Bodine and Sam moved to the bar. Lori stood at the far end of the bar.
Two beers for us, and whatever the lady wants.
Lemonade.
You ain't even supposed to be in here.
You better give her some lemonade and shut your mouth. I'm telling you now, you don't want to make her mad.
The barkeep poured a glass of lemonade and slid it down the bar toward Lori. Matt moved toward one gun hand who appeared to be suffering only flesh wounds. He jerked him off the floor and set him down, not too gently, in a chair.
Where'd Porter and the others go, punk? And give me straight answers and give them to me fast.
Here now, you can't treat a wounded man like that.
That's Matt Bodine, Doc.
The doctor shut his mouth and tended to a patient. But he was angry, and his face showed it. The gun hand's left arm had been shattered just below the elbow by a .44 slug and hung useless by his side.
I got no ID, Bodine, and that's the truth. But they ain't going to give up on all that gold and the girl. They just get some more men and keep right on following y'all.
And you?
I'm out of it. Soon as I can ride, I'm heading back to Nebraska. Didn't none of us count on you and Breed throwing in with Wellman?
Why did Bradley and Doyle and those other top guns join up with trash like Porter?
Money. There's good money to be had in slaving. Porter and the others, and me included, was on our way down to meet with Lake, see if we couldn't get in on some of the action he's got going for himself.
Goddamn filth. Them scared little girls he's kidnapping and selling into bondage. Ain't you got no morals at all? I ought to kill you where you sit.
They ain't nothing but nested trash. Who cares what happens to them?
You calling my little girl nested trash?
Matt backed away from the gunny, sensing what was about to happen. Wellman kicked a pistol toward the man. It came to a stop by the man's boots.
Pick it up, you heathen. You can tell the devil I give you a better break than you and your kind has given them little girls.
The outlaw hesitated.
Pick it up, scum!
The gunny grabbed for the Colt. He closed his fingers around the butt and jacked back the hammer, leveling the muzzle at Wellman's belly. Wellman's rifle was lying on the bar. The old mountain man smiled grimly and drew his Colt. Matt jerked another wounded man from the floor and sat him in a chair.
The fort where Lake and his men do their business, where is it?
The gunny soiled himself. The stench of him filled the beery, gun-smoke, acrid closeness of the saloon.
It's down on the border, just south of Miller Peak, between the Huachucas and the Patagonias. And that's the truth, Bodine, I swear to God it is.
I ought to shoot you for even speaking God's name.
The marshal looked like he was about to wet his long handles. The barkeeps were getting ready to once more hit the floor. Lori sipped her lemonade and looked at the wounded man through cold eyes. Sam took a long swig of beer.
I know nothing else except Porter and Dale gonna raid some ranches on the way down. Grab some more kids for Bada.
Now, a lot of ranches between here and there. Bound to be some more kids grabbed. I get a rope for my horse. We'll hang him and them others still alive.
When the doctor straightened up from tending a patient who had been laid on a billiard table across the room by some citizens of the town, there was a gun in his hand, the hammer back.
There'll be no lynchings in this town.
That there's Dick Wellman, Doc.
I don't give a damn who he is. Now, you people listen to me. These men are my patients. Officially so. You interfere, and I'll have the territorial governor sign warrants for your arrest. Now, go on about your business somewhere other than this saloon.
Wellman glared at the doctor for a moment, then slowly relaxed, leaning back against the bar.
All right, Doc. I don't want to cause you no trouble, and that's my word on it. You can put that hog leg away and go on about patching each crud up.
He turned his back to the doctor and picked up his glass of rye.
I think I'll check in at the hotel. I've been looking forward to a nice hot bath for a week.
Let's all go check in. I think the doctor would work easier without us looking over his shoulder.
Thank you, Mr. Bodine.
The doctor lowered his pistol, looked at it strangely, and then laid it beside the outlaw and returned to his ministering of the wounded. When the searchers were gone, the marshal shook his head at the doctor's bravery.
I don't think I'd have had the nerve to do what you've done, Doc.
The doctor smiled and picked up the pistol.
Just between you and me, Martin, the damn gun was empty.
The next morning, Bodine, Sam, and their new partners headed out again. Wellman had insisted that they resupply and then some.
Why did we practically buy out the store, Dick?
Because there ain't nothing where we're going, child. And I mean nothing. Not until we slide over to the west a tad and resupply at Tucson. If we take a notion to do that. If not, we got enough to make the border. You boys know anything at all about this country?
Nope.
No, sir.
Well, she's wild and beautiful. Especially where we's heading right now. The Mogollons. That's what us old-timers call it. Proper name is the Mogollon Rim. She's rugged any way you want to cut it. Apache country. When we get past the Mogollons and across the San Carlos, we'll hit the desert. People, if you ain't never crossed the desert, you all just in for a shock. It's a living hell.
Is there water where we're going?
Oh, yeah. We'll cross Silver Creek today and make night camp on the edge of the rim. It's 10 or 12 miles from the beginning of the Mogollons. Now watch your hair, people. And whatever happens, save a bullet for Laurie. You don't want her to get taken alive by the Apaches. They overrun us, put a bullet in her head, and then shoot yourselves. I killed a friend of mine back down on the San Carlos in, around 60, I reckon it was. He begged me to, and I done it. Must have been a good 350-yard shot, and I put her true, ended his misery. Made them savages hot, too. They was looking for a couple days' sport with Dell. They chased me for a week after that. I can get along with most Indians, and I've lived with them for years. But I hate a goddamn Apache worse than I do anything else on the face of this earth. Makes my mouth hurt just talking about them.
The next day, they were looking down on the Mogollon Rim, after having spent the night at what was left of an old trading post near a lake. Dick told them that the same man had rebuilt the post four times before finally giving up and pulling out.
Goddamn Apaches. That man made the best whiskey in the territory, too. I never will forgive them heathens for running him out of the country.
Bodine knew that Sam would not take offense at the mountain man's remarks. His father, Medicine Horse, had not been a savage or a heathen, having been educated in the East. But Sam was just as proud of his Indian side as of his white side. He knew that the Indian way of life was very nearly over. All over the West, tribes were being placed on reservations, making the land safe for settlers. And the Apache, too, would eventually lose his battle with progress. But so hated were the Apaches that their plight went unnoticed by the settlers, whose philosophy was, to hell with them. They got what they deserved. From the outset, it was a culture clash that the Apaches were bound to lose.
We'll camp here and post guards come tonight. This is old Big Rump's country, or was. I don't know if old Wapueta is still alive or not. I hope the hell he ain't.
Big Rump?
Tonto Apache chief. He's the one took Dell alive and was torturing him. The man I killed to ease his misery. Old Wapueta had him a rear end, looked like the caboose on a train. But he was mean as a rattlesnake. There's a road the military uses called the Crook Road. We'll come up on it down south a ways, cross it on our way down. It runs from Fort Apache up to Camp Verde. We might run into some soldier boys, and if we do, don't tell them nothing about what we're fixing to do.
Why? Wouldn't they help?
No, nope. I'm doubtful at best. At the worst, they might try to stop us. Besides, they got their hands full fighting the Apaches. Hey, rustle up some grub and coffee. I'm going to take me a look-see around. I'll be back in a couple hours. If I ain't back, don't come a-fogging into the timber looking for me. I might mistook you for an Injun and shoot you.
Wellman picked up his rifle and slipped into the timber, moving as silently as a ghost. Wellman came back hours later, long after dark, walking up to Sam, who was taking the second shift at watch from 10 to 2 in the morning.
Apaches all around us, boy. White Mountain Apaches. Jerky for breakfast and no fires. We'll pull out of here first light and head southwest. Salt River Canyon's about a 3-4 day ride from here, through some of the most rugged country you'll ever seen in all your born days. We get through it with our hair. It'll be a miracle because something's done stirred up the Injuns.
Bodine had been listening to them talk. He slipped out of his blankets and joined Wellman and Sam.
Chapo and his bunch?
Yeah, could be. I got me a hunch they're out looking for more little girls to swap to that worthless scum down on the border.
How far down to this canyon you mentioned?
Near about 100 miles. White Mountain Lake is just to the north of us, and Long Lake is just to the east of us. We'll cross the rim of the Mugiones mid-morning. It'll be hard and patchy country. Indy will be all around us.
Indy?
The people. I once read that if the army had not wrongly attacked a village back in 69, killing women and children, the White Mountain Apaches probably would not be on the warpath today.
Maybe, maybe not. But the chief, Menjarez, he don't like white men. Never has. Him and me, we're about the same age.
You know him?
Oh, I know him. And I don't trust him no further than I can throw you. And he don't like me worth a damn.
Why?
Because I shot him back in 50, that's why. And to make matters worse, I shot him in the butt.
Bodine pulled the lonely and cold last shift, the dog watch, and roused the others an hour before dawn. They chewed on some hardtack washed down with water from their canteens and broke camp just as the sun was turning the eastern sky a gray silver.
Let's ride. Rifles across the saddle horn, people. You see anything suspicious, you sing out. For the next 100 miles, staying alive is something we're going to have to work at.
The sun broke through just as the four of them crossed the rim, and the dew was still shining like broken diamonds on the varied ferns and grasses. Ponderosa pines grew tall and thick and lush, standing like silent sentries all around them.
This is the most beautiful country I have ever seen.
Enjoy it while it lasts. When we hit the desert, you'll think you died and went to hell. The rim drops off sharp a few miles ahead, and there's a creek at the drop-off. We'll pull up there and fix some breakfast. I want some coffee.
When they reached the stream, Matt gathered some wood and Sam built a hat-sized cook fire under the low-hanging limbs of an oak, so what little smoke there was from the dead wood would dissipate through the limbs. Wellman used his bowie knife to slice the bacon. He liked it thick, while Lori peeled the potatoes and got the skillet hot. Sam made the coffee.
Gonna be cold tonight. Might even get below freezing. What month is it anyway?
October, I think.
Time does get by, person, don't it? 25 years since I've been down this way, I'd guess.
Wellman took a plate from Lori and began shoveling it in. Wellman noticed as both Matt and Sam lifted their heads and quickly cut their eyes to one another.
Only Homan, huh?
Yes.
What's that mean?
Friends of the Wolf.
They scare me.
No reason for that. My father said he has never known of a healthy, full-grown wolf to launch an unprovoked attack against a human being. And I'll bet Dick has never heard of such an attack. Have you, Dick?
I had a hunch you'd get me into this as soon as I brought it up. No, I can't say as I ever heard any such attack. But that don't mean I'm gonna pet one.
Wellman went one way, Sam went another, and Bodine threw his arms around Lori, and together they went rolling into the brush. Before the shaft of the arrow had stopped quivering, the campsite was deserted. Matt was very conscious of the heat of the woman next to him. The abrupt contact with her had shown him that everything she had was what God gave her. He slowly released her and went belly down, drawing his Colts. His rifle was by his bedroll. Cautiously, using only his eyes and not moving his head, he surveyed the campsite.
Why didn't they shoot us instead of using arrows?
Might be of a different tribe and at war with the White Mountain Apache. Could be Chapo's bunch and they don't want the others to know they're in this area. And it could be they don't have guns.
Victorio's bunch! Look at that arrow!
Matt looked. He could tell Sioux and Cheyenne and Crow and Arapaho and many of the Plains Indians' arrows, but he knew very little about the Apaches. And from Dick's hiding place, he wondered how the old man could tell the difference in the arrow. But he didn't think this was the time or place to question the statement.
They're young. Just boys.
You got him?
I got him.
A young brave, probably in his late teens, leaped out of hiding and charged across the clearing, a knife in his hand. All heard a faint rustling sound, then the sounds of several running, moccasin-clad feet, the running sounds growing fainter, finally fading away. But the men were all experienced fighters, and none of them moved or talked for 15 minutes.
They're gone.
How can he tell?
The smell. We all have a different odor. We smell different to an Indian.
Wellman stepped out from his hiding place.
Let's pack it up and get gone. We was lucky that time. Let's be about 10 miles gone from this place before them Apaches find help and come back.
10 minutes later, they were in the saddle and riding. The four of them crossed Carrizo Creek and spent the night in a cold camp, not even chancing a small fire to cook with. At first light, they pulled out, with Wellman taking them more south than west, angling toward Salt River Canyon, the old mountain man remembering trails he traveled a quarter of a century back. The country was slowly beginning to change from rugged timber and high, lonesome to a slightly more arid terrain. Once they came close enough to see a huge mountain lion, watching them silently from its perch atop a rock, the big cat made no hostile moves toward them, but its muscles remained taut, and its unblinking eyes never left them as they rode past, staying well out of leaping range of the mountain cat.
We get some farther south, the Apaches up here is going to seem tame. Chapo's got to have the blessing of Goyate to be doing what he's doing.
Who?
Goyate, one who yawns, and big mouth with bad breath. That's what I named him. Don't like me not one little bit. I met him back when he was a youngster, maybe 20 years ago or so. He didn't have much say back then, but then he left for a time, made his name, and became a sub-chief. Made a name for himself by turning tricky and becoming poison mean. A few years back, the members cut a deal with him to recruit warriors. They picked the right man. He gathered together the worst bunch of savages in New Mexico and Arizona. They're unholy terrors is what they is.
I never heard of any warrior chief named Goyate.
Some Mexican soldier hung a nickname on him and it stuck. Now he's known as Geronimo.
At the Salt River, the four of them rested and tried to relax. They did rest, but their relaxation was a tense one, knowing they were surrounded by Apaches. But they did manage to bathe and wash their clothes and have several hot meals. Then Matt remembered something that a drifting cowboy had told him just before he and Sam pulled out of Wyoming and started drifting south.
I heard there was a little town, no more than a trading post really, down near the foothills of the Pinal Mountains. The cowboy who told me about it was drunk at the time and wasn't too sure about the name. Said somebody named it Glob.
Yeah, somebody must have a glob for a brain to put a post smack in the middle of Apache country. Well, it's worth a try. Somewheres along the way, I done lost my chewing tobacco, and I do like a chaw occasional. Whereabouts in the Pinals is this glob place?
He told me it was between the Pinals and the Apache Mountains.
That'd be about 35 or 40 miles from here. We'll give her a shot, then. Stay between Jackson Butte and Chromo Butte. It's rough country, but there's water and good cover.
and we'll be caught up with the Tontos to the west and the White Mountain Apaches to the east. Anybody object to pulling out in the morning?
No one did.
The name of the two-building town was not Glob. It was Globe. As one of the buildings was a trading post with a saloon, they immediately headed inside to wash the dust from their throats and hear whatever news had come through.
This ain't the original location of the town. It all started out on Rambo's Peak as a mining town. It was moved here because it was a better location.
Do tell. Give me a ride. History lessons make me awful dry.
Beer for Bodine and Sam, lemonade for Lori, who was making the barkeep nervous just by being in the bar side of the trading post.
I thought we might have some peace around here with old Cochise dying, but 'twasn't to be. Things is damn near as bad as they was.
Chapo get up this way much?
That one is one of the worst. He just raided a ranch west of here night before last, killed a man and woman, and tortured their teenage son to death. Kidnapped a little girl, poor thing.
Victorio?
Victorio's talking peace among the Membres, but if the army tries to move him from New Mexico to San Carlos, there'll be war, bet on it.
The Chiricahua Reservation's still going?
Not after it was found that Geronimo and his cutthroats was just using it for sanctuary between raids. That, and them killings last March, prompted the army to close it. They moved them all over to San Carlos, which didn't make us around here too damn happy.
Bodine knew that the San Carlos Reservation was a barren wasteland of some 5,000 square miles of mostly low-lying land, full of lizards, rattlesnakes, and terrible sandstorms. The vegetation was mostly cactus and mesquite, and a few sorry-looking cottonwoods along the riverbanks. The government never gave the Apache enough food to live on. A weekly allotment of flour and beef never was enough to last more than 4 days. Then they went hungry. The Indians were constantly being short-changed on the beef, usually with the reservation officials being bought off to look the other way. To make matters worse, the 5,000 Apaches who were forced onto the San Carlos represented some 8 tribes, some of them longtime enemies. All in all, it was not a pleasant existence. The government, in its efforts to transform nomadic warriors into farmers, turned the reservation for a time into no more than a prison farm. Bodine looked toward the south.
Must be awful for those young girls down there.
I expect it is.
The old mountain man looked first at Lori, then for several hard and lingering seconds at Bodine and Sam.
You all better know this now. If I get inside that slave factory down yonder, I ain't taking no prisoners. If I get close enough to take a prisoner for information, I'll skin him alive if I think he knows anything that would be a help to us. Anybody who would kidnap young girls to sell into bondage don't deserve to live. Regardless of whether they's Injun or white or Chinaman, don't make no difference to me. If any of you feel like you ain't got the stomach for it, now's the time to say so. Tucson ain't but a hop and a skip from where we is. You can go there and get out of my business.
Suppose some of them want to surrender, Dick.
They got a problem.
Here we sit, 4 of us, talking about facing 50 or 100 gun hands and discussing their possible surrender. Who do we think we are?
People with right on their side, Lori. A lawman over in Texas once said that you can't stop a man who knows he's right and just keeps on coming.
Or a woman.
Where are you folks heading?
South.
Rough country between here and there.
Yeah, I've been there before.
The old mountain man jerked a thumb at Lori.
Is there a place for her to sleep decent and safe for a night or two?
I got a room in the back she could use. She'll be safe there.
I appreciate it. We'll sleep in the livery with our horses. You got ready-cooked grub here?
Sure do. Got beef and beans and taters.
Now you get it. We'll sure eat it.
The 4 of them stayed in Globe for 2 days. Relaxing and listening for any news that might come their way concerning Chapo and his band, or Porter and his men. They learned that Chapo was likely to strike anywhere in the territory. His band numbered less than 100. And of the 8 tribes of Apaches, only a couple would have anything at all to do with Chapo, and they were Victorio and Nana. Of Porter and his men, they learned that a large group of riders had been seen heading south out of the Mescal Mountains, following the San Pedro.
That's probably Porter. They probably veer to the southwest somewhere down around the Little Dragoons and head for the Huachucas.
That miner said a large group of riders. That means that Porter's picked up some more trash.
You two pick up a spare canteen, boys. As soon as we leave the Pinals, we'll be riding into a land filled with low-class people and damn little water.
That pretty well sums up hell, Dick.
If it's any worser, I sure don't want to go there.
They left Globe, heading south, at the best possible time of the year. Had it been summer, the conditions would have been very nearly intolerable for man and horse. They rode during the pre-dawn hours and the early morning, holing up by noon and resting during the hottest part of the day. At night, they listened to the yap of the desert fox and lonely calls of coyote, and once they heard the wavering howl of the wolf. They rode through the Tortilla Mountains, past Crozier Peak to the west and Holy Joe Peak far to the east. They picked their way through a maze of ancient saguaro, some of the giant cactus more than 150 years old, standing 50 feet high and weighing 10 tons, many of them with 30 to 40 huge arms.
Injuns eat them red fruits up there on the cactus. They ain't bad, but I wouldn't want a steady diet of them.
How do those birds nest in there without getting killed on the thorns?
Oh, don't ask me, child. Just another one of God's wonders is all I can say. These rats out here in this hell that don't never take a drink of water, so I've been told. I don't know how they do that either.
What's that up ahead?
Them's the Santa Catalina Mountains, and these a pretty sight for these eyes.
Water?
Oh, you betcha, boy.
In actual distance, they had traveled about 75 miles, but their clothes were crusty with dried sweat and dust. Their eyes were red-rimmed from the intense sun and baked land and from staring hard for any sign of hostiles.
We've been lucky.
The four of them dismounted from their weary horses to stand and gaze at the abrupt and most welcome transformation. They were looking at beautiful grassy meadows and forests of ponderosa pine, and they could hear falling water far in the distance.
Seven Falls.
It sounds delicious.
I never heard it put quite like that, but you pegged it right. Yonder's a creek, girl. You go bathe and such, and I'll hold a gun on these two to keep them from sneaking a peek.
Oh, they wouldn't do that, Dick.
Bodine and Sam just grinned. Sometime later, they had all soaked off about 5 pounds of trail dust and sat on the rocks below Seven Falls, enjoying the beauty and the peacefulness of the scenery.
You two do smell a whole lot better. I was about ready to ask Laurie if she had any toilet water to put on you boys.
You're a fine one to talk. I thought I was in the company of a skunk riding up here alongside you.
I expect we best plan on heading to the fort in the Huachucas. We might get lucky, get some more lead into Porter's bunch along the way.
Army fort?
Yeah, it's always undermanned, so I was told. They won't give us any trouble.
And how far away is that?
Oh, I'd guess good 130, 40 miles from where we're luxuriating right now. We'll stay in the mountains for several days. I know the trails. There'll be desert for a spell between the Rincon and the Whitstone Mountains. The Empire Mountains is grim, but I know where the Tenaz is, or was. Then we'll have another spell down to the Huachucas.
What's a Tinajas?
Natural stone tanks high up in the rocks that hold water. It's a good time of year for them to have water, too. Summer can get kind of grim.
Any towns between here and there?
Well, not that I know of. There used to be a trading post some few miles south and west of the Little Dragoons. Might be a town there now. But the way the patches raid and burn, I wouldn't count on it.
When do you want to leave, Dick?
We'll get a good rest this afternoon and tonight. Pull out in the morning.
They left at dawn, skirting Mount Lemmon and riding south out of the Santa Catalinas and toward the Rincon Mountains. Twice they saw sign of Apaches, but if the Indians saw them, and that was quite likely, the Braves decided not to attack the riders. Perhaps it was the way they sat their saddles, or maybe it was the set of their jaws or the hard look on their faces. The Indians did not fight to take losses, and one look at the four people riding south would tell a seasoned warrior that much blood would be spilled fighting these people. Or perhaps the Apache just did not feel like making war. Perhaps the signs were not right.
Apaches are notional folks. Everything gotta be just right for them to attack. They gotta sit and palaver for a time.
They left the coolness of the forests and rode into the near barrenness. There was water, but one had to know where to find it. They cut slightly east and found the trading post just west of the San Pedro River. They had not been bothered by the Apache.
Now we're about 25 miles from the Huachucas. Son of a bitch, would you just take a look at them horses at the hitch rail?
Bodine and Sam had already noticed them. They belonged to some of Porter's men. Some of the same horses the men had seen following the ambush in the canyon and again at Horsehead Crossing. Wellman took the lead riding up behind the trading post.
Let's go clean out a snake pit.
The place could be called a town, if one wanted to stretch the meaning of that word. There were six buildings and one bumpy, rutted road running east and west.
Ain't progress grand? Place has done become a regular metropolis since I last seed it. Let's go reduce the population, folks.
You just hold on a minute, Dick.
The mountain man wheeled around and stared at the much younger man.
We don't know who might be in there, and I'm not going in shooting until I do know. We were lucky back up north and that no innocent person got killed. We might not be so lucky this time around. There might even be some law in this burg. A man with more guts than that old man back at the crossing.
So?
Mountain men would walk up to the devil and spit in his eye just to see what he'd do. They were a breed such as the nation had never seen before, and with their passing, as progress caught up with them, would most likely never see again.
We're down here to try and rescue some kidnapped girls, not get thrown in the pokey because we didn't use our heads.
Wellman glared hard at Bodine for a moment.
All right, boy. You run this show, then. What do you think we ought to do?
Well, hell, Dick, go in and have a drink. What else?
Laurie, you go in the store door of the building. Cover us from that side.
The blonde nodded and walked toward the mercantile side of the huge building. Mac noticed that it was a pleasure watching her walk away. He put that pleasant thought out of his mind and loosened his guns and leather. The three men walked toward the saloon side, stood for a moment staring into the much darker interior so their eyes would more quickly adjust once inside, and pushed open the bat wings. The three men walked quickly to the bar and fanned out, backs to the bar, staring at the room full of rowdies who were giving them dark looks of hate. Porter was not among them, and neither were the top guns Sam and Bodine had seen up north. But several of the outlaws were still wearing dirty bandages from wounds suffered during the ambush in the canyon. Wellman smiled at the crowd of a dozen or so. The old man was anxious to drag iron, and the crowd of gunnies could sense it.
Where's that pig you call a boss? What's his name? I disremembered right off.
Potty, isn't it?
Yeah, something like that, or maybe it was Pootie.
The saloon quickly emptied of anyone not associated with the Porter gang.
He's around, which is more than you're going to be for very long, old man.
You think you're going to be the one to cash my chips in, punk?
I might be.
Then stand up and do it.
Some other time, Wellman. We got more important things to do than fool around some old has-been like you.
You lily-livered, shit-for-brain, shit-eating, pussy-whipped, dandified, candy-ass cocksucker.
Still, the man would not stand and fight, and none of his friends showed any inclination to mix it up with Wellman. Sam began moving his hands, speaking in sign language. The gunny got the message, loud and clear. He flushed a deep red and jumped to his feet, his hands hovering over the butts of his guns.
Don't you be calling me no sissy boy, you damn half-breed.
I just did.
Then draw, you greasy savage.
Sam drew, smoothly and swiftly. None of the other gunnies would stand and draw. They watched as their dying compadre collapsed to the floor.
Whole damn bunch is yelling.
Bodine's eyes didn't leave the gun hands seated around the tables.
Now, I guess they're under orders not to mix it up with us.
Yeah, it still makes them yeller.
One of Porter's men stood up, slowly, his hands in plain sight.
Well, we'll be leaving now. See you boys around, I imagine.
What about him?
Bodine pointed to the dead man.
The breed shot him. Let the breed bury him.
I just can't figure it.
The four of them had left the tiny hamlet about an hour after the barroom shooting. They had resupplied and pulled out while they still had several hours of good light left them.
I cussed all them rowdies back yonder, called them boys things I wouldn't call a skunk, and they still wouldn't find.
They got something in mind for us, that's for sure. But what is it?
And where was Porter and the rest of his gunfighters?
This lake person down on the border has 50 or so men in his gang. Porter has 25 or so. What better way to get rid of us than for them to join forces and just wait for us to ride in there? So let's don't give them that opportunity. Dick, do you know a way in other than straight south?
Sure. We can either cut east and circle back, coming in through below the Huachucas, or we can head west and circle back and come in that way.
Which way would you suggest?
Parker Canyon. We'll ride south and a tad west. They'll be expecting us to come straight in from the Huachucas. This might throw them off a bit, give us a little edge.
What happens if we get down there and the girls are already gone?
I'll track them girls right up to and then through the gates of hell if I have to. And kill any man who gets in my way.
They were riding south, keeping Sonoyta Creek to the west of them. Just a few miles to the east, numerous silver camps were still operating, although many were even now ghost towns. They began angling toward the southeast, traveling through the Patagonia Mountains and into the San Rafael Valley country. A few people still lived in and around the old mining camp of Maori, and they decided to stop there and see if they might learn anything.
There might be a few folks still hanging on at Washington Camp. That's a few miles south. We don't learn nothing here. We'll wander down that way.
The saloon was still open and doing business, so they wandered in and bellied up to the bar. The bartender, wiping his hands on a dirty apron front, gave Lori a sideways glance, but other than that, had no comment about her being in the saloon.
Rye.
Beer.
Beer.
I'd like a lemonade.
Ain't got no lemonade, miss. Rye, whiskey, and mezcal or beer, that's it.
Lori looked around, eyeballing the dirt and grime of the place.
Beer. Wash the mug before you pour it, and dry it with a clean cloth.
Yes'm.
The barkeep walked off, shaking his head, but he washed all the mugs and managed to find a clean enough-looking rag.
San Rafael Cattle Company still in operation?
Sure is. You from around this part of the country?
Came through once or twice. I'll come right out and say it, and if you repeat it, I'll give you up to Green River.
The bartender was an old hand. He knew that remark meant this grizzled old man was probably one of the last of the breed called mountain men. Up to Green River meant taking a Green River knife up the hilt in his belly.
Ask your questions. I ain't a man who repeats things if I'm told not to.
That old Mex fort south of here, who's living in it now?
One down on Santa Cruz?
And don't give me no damn useless ton wagon. There ain't but one Mex fort around here.
All right, keep your pants on. Outlaw named Lake took it over about a year ago, I reckon. Maybe longer than that. Got himself a regular army down there. 50, 60 hard cases.
Uh-huh. Does business with Chapo, too, doesn't he?
So I've been told.
Just how much have you been told?
I got to live around here, mister. So I reckon I done said enough.
Wellman moved swiftly for a man his age. He snaked a hand across the bar, grabbed the smaller man by the throat, and began shaking him like a dog with a rabbit.
My name's Dick Wellman, and this here's Matt Bodine and Sam Two Wolves. The lady's name is Miss Lori, and you're gonna tell me everything you know or I'll just squeeze the life right out of you.
The barkeep's eyes were bugged out like a frog, and he nodded his head. Wellman dropped him to the floor behind the bar. The barkeep came up with a sawed-off shotgun in his hands. Matt slapped him in the face with a beer mug, shattering the mug and not doing the man's front teeth a bit of good. They bounced around on the floor like yellow chips of stone. The barkeep hit the floor, out cold.
All righty. Laura, you rumble around in the back, locate the kitchen, see you can't fix some grub for us. Sam, you tie the barkeep to the chair. I got me a notion that when I tell him what I'm going to do if he don't start jabbering, he's going to start bumping his gums faster than we can listen.
A half hour later, the barkeep's eyes walled back in his head as he looked at Wellman's long-bladed knife.
You wouldn't do that to me. I'm a white man.
Your scum is what you is. All the time knowing about them poor, scared children down yonder and not doing nothing about it.
What could I do? There ain't 15 people left in this town and half of them is drunk most of the time.
What you can do right now is tell me everything you know about the fort. And mister, you better tell me the truth.
I can't do that. Lake and them mothers will kill me.
Wellman laid the big blade against the side of the barkeep's face. The smile on the old mountain man's face was not a pleasant curving of the lips.
I'll wager they'll kill you a whole lot quicker than I will.
The man started talking. When the four of them rode out of the dying and crumbling town the next morning, they left behind them a barkeep who would probably have difficulty sleeping for all his remaining time on Earth. Wellman had not physically hurt the man, but mentally, he had scarred him forever. The barkeep had taken a long look into those hard eyes of the mountain man, felt the cold steel of the knife against his face, and decided that bearing his soul would probably be a very wise thing to do. And so he did. They rode down through Washington Camp, and there they veered more to the southeast, toward the border with Mexico. They took their time, staying alert, for this was Chapo's country. And while Chapo's followers were few, no Apache ever lived who could match their fighting skills and cruelty with prisoners.
What's that?
Matt retrieved the brightly colored fabric that had snagged on a low branch and handed the cloth to Wellman, while Sam walked the area, looking for signs.
I don't think it's been here long.
It hasn't. These tracks are not more than 24 hours old.
Poor, scared little child. Man's gotta be crap sorry to be involved in anything like stealing children and selling to bondage.
How far away from the fort are we?
Not more than 5 miles. Yonder's a Santa Cruz a-twisting. We best get off this trail and make camp. Then I'll go prowling some to get the feel of the place again. Now, if I don't come back, and there's a chance I might not, my little girl's name is Jenny. Pretty little thing. You get her out of there. And I want you all to stay put. If I ain't back in 2 days, that'll mean I done seen the elephant. Then it'll be time for y'all to come a-fogging. You be careful, child. You boys, take her easy.
Do we chance a fire?
No. Apaches would smell the smoke from miles. We'll just have to settle for a cold camp.
Wellman left his horse well concealed about 2 miles from the fort and pulled off his boots, slipping moccasins on his feet. He would go it on foot from this point. He had watered his horse, and there was enough water left in the small pool and enough graze for a couple of days. If he didn't come back, the horse would jerk its picket pin and be gone. Wellman made his way cautiously through the timber and the brush. He was in Rolling Hills country, brown now with winter not far off. He had it in his mind that the old fort was in Mexico, set just south of the border on the east side of the Santa Cruz. And the barkeep had said that Lake was probably paying off some corrupt Mexican officials. He thought they were army officers, in order to stay in business. So that meant that not only were they facing anywhere from 75 to 100 gunslicks and assorted trash, but that they might be looking at Mexican soldiers as well. Wellman knew that in Sonora, Mexico, at this point in time, the army, for the most part, was controlled by the rich landowners, a barren peasant type of government, and it was corrupt to the core, the boots of the government grinding the peasant's face into the dirt.
Well, soldier boys, you best be out on patrol when we get there, because a bullet don't give a goddamn who it hits.
It took him several hours to reach a vantage point overlooking the fort. And it was a depressing sight, in that the place looked awesome at first glance, seemingly impossible to breach. But Wellman knew there was a way. He just had to come up with it. The fort had been built in a clearing, taking up about 100 or so acres. The fort itself was huge, with several two-story buildings set inside high, thick walls.
I sure don't remember the place being this big. There it is, so let's see if I can't figure a way to get in, get the kids, and get out.
He memorized the layout and watched what activity there was going on inside the compound. He concluded that the biggest building was the headquarters, and probably where Lake lived and the kids were being held. Then he suddenly grinned, an idea popping into his head.
Ah, it might work.
Then he brightened as he watched a number of young kids, all girls, being escorted out into the yard of the walled compound under heavy guard. Relief filled Wellman. They were still being held in the fort. With that information in hand, he slipped away from the fort and made his way back to the camp.
I'll stay here with Laurie. Matt, you and Sam beat it back to that mining camp we come through and buy all the dynamite they'll let you have. Don't forget caps and fuses. We're gonna have to blast our way into that place.
Did you see any soldiers?
No, and I hope it stays that way.
We'll leave now. There's several hours of good light left. With any kind of luck, we'll be back late tomorrow afternoon.
All right, careful, boys. I didn't see no sign of Chapo's band, but that bunch is like rattlesnakes. It's when you don't see them that you gotta worry.
Bodine and Sam lucked out at their first stop. A miner out of luck and needing a grubstake sold them all his supplies, including dynamite, and threw in a pack horse as well. The Blood Brothers were back with Wellman and Laurie hours before they were due to return.
This'll damn sure get their attention. Let's start rigging the sticks for throwing. Four to a bunch. You bought some binder twine, too. That's good. Let's get to it, people. The sooner we can get this done and grab them kids, the sooner we can build a fire and we can all have a cup of coffee.
They were rolled out and packed up an hour before dawn. And it was cold in the pre-dawn, all of them wishing for a warm fire and a hot cup of coffee. They had to settle for jerky and a drink of water. And they longed for a hot bath, for they were all getting gamey.
We have to take into consideration that once we hit the place, Lake and the others might take the kids and run. If that's the case, they'll probably head straight west, toward the Gulf of California. Dick, you said the ship would dock where the coyote runs into the Gulf.
That's my understanding.
You know anything about that country?
Not much, just that it's hot and dry. That's desert country.
We'll just play it by ear. Everybody ready to go?
They all nodded, their faces clearly showing the tension in the pre-dawn.
Let's ride.
They all had spare pistols, taken from dead outlaws who had faced them along their journey, plus the spare pistol that each always carried. The spares were loaded up full and tucked behind their belts. It would be Lori's job, once they had blown the massive gates, to stay with the horses. Wellman would gather up and hold horses for the kids to ride. Bodine and Sam would breach the headquarters building and locate and lead the kids out. But as Wellman had pointed out, all that was subject to quick change. The sky was sodden with low-hanging clouds as they pulled out. Before they had gone a mile, it began to rain, the drops fat and cold, and while all silently cursed the discomfort as they struggled into dark slickers, they all said a silent prayer, for the rain would cover any sounds they might make. The pre-bunched dynamite had been well covered against rain the night before. The ghostly falling drops made the silent trek even more grim, for this was a spooky place, even under the best of conditions. It was high up country, a place of crags and upthrusting cliffs, and the rain was producing sudden and fast-flowing little streams. The rain poured and turned into a violent, but fortunately for them, a short-lived storm, with zigzagging lightning cutting the dark sky and crashing thunder that made conversation impossible. The winds tore limbs from trees and blocked the narrow trail, oftentimes forcing them to seek another route. It became so dark that one had difficulty seeing the other in front of them. Still, they rode on, knowing that the storm would keep those in the fort inside and hopefully unaware of the searchers until it was too late. They bunched up so no one would get lost in the storm. Eventually, the storm abated, the winds calmed, and the rain was reduced to a drizzle. The skies remained dark, night in the midst of dawn. Finally, they came to the little hollow where Wellman had left his horse when he had previously studied the fort.
She lies right up over that ridge. We're right on top of her, people. I've seen it. You people crawl up on yonder and take you a good look-see at what we're up again. I'll stay with the horses.
The faces of the three mirrored their shock at initially viewing the fortress, for at first glance, it seemed impregnable. But then Bodine shifted positions and worked his way around to where he could see the rear of the fort and began to size it up with a warrior's eyes. A dangerous smile creased his lips. He rejoined the others.
I took a good look at the rear of the fort, the big building, what Wellman called the headquarters, butts right up against the wall. I guess they never expected any attack from the south, because there's all sorts of crap been allowed to gather back there. Rocks and crates and what have you.
Bodine paused, glanced over at Sam, and grinned at his blood brother.
Let me guess. You're going in the back way while we create a diversion for you in the front.
You got part of it right. Let's get back to Dick and lay it out for him.
By the time they reached Wellman in the hollow, they had a plan.
Boy, have you lost your mind? There's a suicide stunt. I'm agin it.
Think about it. With any kind of luck at all, I can get in there, get the kids out, over the wall, and be gone while you three are creating a diversion. Just as soon as the last girl is clear, I'll light the fuses on enough explosives to bring down that whole damn building and stun everybody in that place for 5 minutes. I gotta play it by ear, Dick, but I think it'll work.
All right, boy. I admire your courage. What kind of high sign are you gonna give us so we'll know you're clear?
Oh, you'll know, Dick. And that whole building blows up. That's your cue.
You just can't be subtle about anything, can you?
I'll leave my rifles here and take a full pack of dynamite. That'll give you and Dick 8 fully loaded Winchesters. One of you here, the other about 100 yards over yonder. There's a narrow wash just behind the rear wall. The kids will be running up that to the back of this rise we're on. Lori, I want you to be where the wash peters out and meets this rise.
There ain't gonna be no horses for the kids.
That's right. We'll have to rope the kids together so they don't get separated and hoof it back to that mining camp where we bought the dynamite. We can pick up wagons there.
Rear guard?
No. At least not right off. When we get clear, you and Lori go on with the kids and me and Dick will lay back with rifles and discourage any who might want to follow.
Now that I'm looking forward to.
Bodine took off his spurs and stowed them in a saddlebag. He filled a huge pack with explosives and struggled into the heavy pack. Then he disappeared into the mist. While the others moved into position, Bodine slipped into the narrow ending of the wash and began making his way toward the rear of the old fort. The water was about ankle deep, but running off rapidly. He could see the waterline marks that had been cut during heavier downpours. The wash would not be a safe place to be during any storm. Bodine glanced up at the leaden-looking sky and hoped any further rain would hold off for another hour at least. Bodine moved on. With only a few hundred feet to go before reaching the spot where he had planned to climb out, the walls of the arroyo were now several feet over his head. But he could see where a spot had caved out of the north side. He would have to climb out there. From there, it would be only a dozen yards to the wall surrounding the old fort. Reaching the jumble of rocks, Bodine climbed up carefully and looked over the top. So far, so good. He could see no one walking a guard mount along the inner wall. He found a good grip and heaved himself up, scrambling quickly to the wall and hugging it for a moment, listening. He could hear nothing. Bodine tied one end of a rope around a boulder and looped the remainder around his chest. He climbed up on the pile of rocks and trash by the wall and grabbed hold of the top of the wall. He heaved himself over the wall and landed heavily on the other side, quickly drawing both Colts and looking around him. Nothing. He looked up at the one window that faced the wall and the arroyo beyond. It was barred. He had seen that from the rise and had come prepared for it. Several faces appeared at the bars, frightened young faces. Bodine put a finger to his lips, silently warning them to be quiet. The girls nodded their heads. Slipping out of the heavy pack, Bodine jumped up and grabbed hold of the bars, muscling himself up, bringing himself eye level with the sill and looking into the cavernous room. There was no glass in the window.
Are you guarded?
From the outside.
Do they check on you very often?
No, sir. Who are you?
A man who's come to get you out of this place. Just stay put and tell the others not to make any more noise than you normally make. Hang on, girls, I'll be right back.
Bodine dropped to the ground and ran to the corner of the building where he had seen a bench. He dragged it back to the window. From the pack, he took out a flat piece of metal he'd bought from the miner, climbed up on the bench, and began working at the bolts that held the bars in place. The adobe was old and the bolts were rusty. Still, it took him precious minutes to pry several loose. He tugged at the bars and winced when one bolt made a sharp grinding sound as it came loose. He paused for a moment, listening. If anyone heard the sound, they did not think it important enough to investigate. He could understand why there was no one back here guarding the windows. The way the bars were positioned, there was no way the children could have pried loose the bars from the inside. Bodine put the bench back where it had been, muscled the pack up to the kids, and with the rope still looped around his chest, jumped up, grabbed the edge of the protruding sill, and crawled through the pried open bars. Once inside, he repositioned the bars so they would look, at a glance, as though they were undisturbed. He let the rope dangle down the side of the building. Building and rope were almost the same color.
Now stay quiet, girls. I've got about 10 minutes' work to do, and then we'll get gone from this place.
Bodine counted the girls and bit back a groan of dismay. There were 25 of them, all scared and trembling. Bodine went to a dirty, fly-specked window that faced out into the yard. He could see nobody moving about. The rain had begun, falling in a dull drizzle.
Have you been fed this morning?
About 30 minutes ago, sir.
Will they pick up the bowls?
No, sir. Not until dinner time.
How many men are inside the compound?
I guess there's between 75 and 100 of them, sir. A big new bunch rode in about 3 days ago. Somebody named Porter.
Where do they keep their horses?
Some of them are kept in the stable inside the walls, but most of them are kept in a corral on the east side of the fort.
Guarded?
I don't think so, sir. They've got a deal worked out with the Apaches so the Injuns don't swipe their ponies.
Chapo?
Yes, sir.
Any of you girls ever ridden astride?
They all grinned impishly at him.
Bareback?
The grins widened.
Good. Anybody here named Jenny?
Me, sir.
Your grandpa Dick Wellman is over yonder on the ridge. You girls do as I tell you, and you'll soon be out of here.
What's your name, sir?
Matt Bodine.